Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm JB Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Welcome to Stuff from the Science Lab from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey guys, this is Alice Nattermelk, the science editor at HowStuffWorks.com.
And this is Robert Lambs, science writer at HowStuffWorks.com. And this podcast, we're talking about robots.
And whether or not they're alive.
Yeah, big question. Are robots alive?
So you just got into this question when you wrote the similarly named article for Discovery News, right?
Yes, yeah, we've been doing a bunch of these big questions for Discovery News. And we've been doing some big questions for HowStuffWorks as well, just, you know, are robots alive? You know, what are some other ones?
Strickland wrote about it too.
Yeah, Strickland wrote one about robot consciousness and all, and it's a very related issue. We're not going to get in as much into consciousness, but deal more with definitions of life and how robots may or may not meet that criteria.
Yeah, so believe it or not, there are quite a few definitions of life out there. So let's get on to one of the more scientific definitions of life. And that is one in which proteins and nucleic acids interact in ways that allow a structure to grow and reproduce.
Yeah, I think pretty obvious robots not going to meet that particular criteria.
Right. So
yeah, this is definitely describing life, defining life as organic in
a very particular manner that applies to us, definitely.
Right. So it's a no-go on robots for that one. However, there's another definition that life is a system that's capable of Darwinian evolution. All right, to meet this criteria, a robot would have to be able to reproduce and make more of itself.
Right.
And it would also need a source of variation.
Mutation.
So that all of the new generation wouldn't be identical to the previous, and that all the siblings would be varied as well. So then natural selection could take place. Because when humans reproduce or any animal, they're not creating exact, replicants of themselves. They're not creating clones. They're creating, variations. And the whole idea is, that we're going to create a lot of different variations on this, successful model. And, we'll see if an even more successful model will come out of it. Or if there's a variation that will be more adapt for the, you know, for the current situation.
Right, mutation as the spice of life.
Exactly. So, can robots do that?
A couple of people have taken a shot at this, right?
Yeah. More than a couple, but there are a couple that are rather interesting to look at. There's a Cornell team that built this robot. And these are robots, this particular robot especially, is one that was designed only to replicate itself in a very simple manner. So it's not like it's doing other things and then on the side it's making more of itself. Basically, this one is made up of a series of modular cubes, and each cube has all the, like, you know, basically it's kind of like a block robot.
Like, okay.
Imagine little cubes, and the cubes contain the robotics, if you will.
This is no C-3PO.
Right. And it sort of builds itself out of these blocks, and then it can build another of itself out of other blocks.
Okay.
But the blocks are already built, but it's very rudimentary.
Right. So there's that one, and there's the English guys, right, out of the University of Bath?
Yeah. What's it called?
Rep Rap, which I like a lot. And that's short for Replicating Rapid Prototyper. So what this particular bot is concerned with is it prints out these thin layers of molten biodegradable plastic, and those layers can then be used to create its own 3D parts.
It can also make sandals.
No way.
Yeah. They had, like, it's basically.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's like almost like a router. You know, it's just making little shapes.
Sandals for humans?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it's like basically, like I say, these are very simple robots. It's kind of, you know, it's just making.
Well, to me, that's the more remarkable thing that it can make. Well, anyway.
Yeah, like, these are just the baby steps towards, you know, the sort of the very sci-fi ideas that you might see in, say, Stanislaw Lem's The Invisible, or Philip K. Dick's Second Variety, you know, or I guess Terminator, that movie 9, you know, where you have robots that are making more of themselves. You know, this is how it begins, except hopefully it doesn't end quite as dismally.
Yeah, so one interesting question that came up when you were researching this was the question of whether computer viruses are alive.
Yeah, a lot of people make the argument that they are, including Stephen Hawking.
Really?
I seem to remember, yeah. In one of those documentaries that are getting so much media coverage right now on Discovery Channel.
Oh, Into the Universe with Stephen Hawking.
Yeah, really good series.
Yeah, you wrote for that.
yeah, for the web presence for it. So yeah, are computer viruses alive? Well, one thing to keep in mind is that regular viruses are tricky enough to define. Depending on who you ask, they kind of occupy a gray area. The viruses, and again, these are organic viruses, lack most of the internal structure and machinery that characterize many definitions of life, including the biosynthetic machinery that is necessary for reproduction. In order for a virus to replicate, it has to infect a host cell.
But computer viruses, on the other hand, have this sort of partially automated ability to reproduce. But the virus itself, this is an important distinction, is not the agent of reproduction. The computer is.
Yeah. I ran across a great analogy for this in Eugene H. Spafford's Computer Viruses as Artificial Life, which is a great read. You can find it online in PDF form. Yeah, he points out that the virus is not the agent of reproduction. The computer is. He said, he argues in this that, or he
makes the analogy.
So he makes the analogy that if that is life, then printed out blueprints for a Xerox machine are life. Okay? Like a big stack of papers that have all the plans for the Xerox machine.
I'm not following.
Well, okay. So I give these plans to you, right?
Right.
And then you could technically use those plans to make a Xerox machine, correct?
Yes.
And then you could take those plans, put them through the Xerox machine, and then you have a new copy, a replica of then you have two stacks of Xerox plans.
Oh.
Stack A and stack B.
I guess.
And then you could take stack B, and I could read them, build a Xerox machine, and then run stack B through the new Xerox machine and create stack C.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah, but, you know, but obviously the stack of paper is just a stack of paper with information on them. So I found that particularly interesting. Of course, the other question would be, can a computer virus evolve? That's another problem, according to Spafford. While a complex computer virus might be able to adapt and evolve, you know, he argues that this kind of virus would be larger than most host programs, and possibly larger than the host system as well. Viruses out there on the internet, they do evolve, but in the sense that there's an author out there who is to tweaks them and makes them adapt. So that they can, you know, better screw with your browser.
Right. So then if you look at it that way, you wouldn't necessarily call a computer virus alive.
Right. Because the agent of change here is, you know, some guy in Korea on a PC.
What's up with putting Korea in there?
Well, I thought it seems like there was a big story where they're everywhere.
All
I'm
right.
not saying that all computer virus authors are in Korea by any means.
So let's talk about the difference between automatons and actual robots.
Yeah, this is something important to keep in mind, and something that came out of a conversation I had with Idaho National Laboratory roboticist Derek Wadsworth. He said that you, on one hand, you have an automaton, and this is like a mechanical manipulator on a vehicle assembly line.
Right. All right. Have you seen some of the pictures of the robots on vehicle assembly lines? They're pretty amazing.
Yeah, I've not only seen pictures, I've seen moving pictures of them.
Excellent.
Yeah. It seems like they used to show them on Sesame Street, didn't they?
I've never seen that.
You've never seen Sesame Street?
No, I've never seen particular part of Sesame Street.
There's a robot version of Sesame Street. It's just it's just auto assembly line machines. So they have the ability, these robot arms that are putting together cars, they have the ability to sense and act. Like a vehicle frame advances on a conveyor belt, the manipulator senses its presence and then installs a windshield.
Yeah.
A true robot applies an extra step in this process, and that's reason.
Right.
Right. It analyzes the sense data and then acts based on its computations.
And the cool thing is that as humans, we have those capabilities. So in everything we do, we're constantly processing our environment. We're, you know, smelling what's cooking. We're analyzing what that smell means to us, and then we're producing an action. You know, we're going to the kitchen to, mm-hmm. you know, sniff out an extra donut that somebody left in the break room.
Yeah, but that's one of the things, that there's so many little bits of sense data that we absorb, and we don't even realize we're absorbing them. It just, you know, it's happening subconsciously. And then we're computing that with, like, past life experiences, you know, some of which may, you know, a lot of data from the past, et cetera. It gets so complicated that we're not even aware of most of what's going on.
So to apply this to robots, according to Wadsworth, they're alive in the sense that, yes, some robots do, in fact, have the ability to sense, reason, and act. So I'd say that I'd score 1 point for robots being alive.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good. In fact, one of the robots that you can make a case for being alive actually lives in my house, and probably a lot of listeners' houses.
I'm so jealous of this. I totally want a Roomba.
Yeah.
I just got a really, really, really great vacuum, which I'm very excited about.
Yeah, but who's the agent of vacuuming in that scenario?
That is true. I am the agent of vacuuming.
Or those kids. Get those kids to work vacuuming.
No way. I'm not letting them touch my new vacuum.
Well, see, that's the great thing about the Roomba is the Roomba is vacuuming, obviously. And it's not just, it's easy if you've never played with one of these before. You know, it's great because it's not just bouncing off the walls and just randomly vacuuming the whole house. You know, it's actually measuring, you know, where it is. It's reacting to the environment and like creating this map of where things are.
So that the next time it comes into your kitchen, it remembers that, oh gosh, the trash can is situated in the corner, and I'm not going to go in this direction.
Well, I'm not sure about the more advanced models. I know the one we have, it seems like each time you turn it on, it's a new learning experience for it.
Okay, I see.
But during that run, it'll get smarter as it goes.
How does your cat feel about your Roomba?
They don't get along all that well. They don't hate each other, but they don't like to hang out. The Roomba, you know, you still have to actually clean it and things like that. That's the thing, the problem. Some people get the Roomba and they're like, you're like, hooray, I never have to mess with a vacuum cleaner again. And that's wrong. You actually need to clean it out.
Can I ask you a personal question?
Go for it.
How often do you vacuum? Or you or your partner?
We turn on the Roomba, I don't know, maybe once a week. It depends on the room. And the cat actually plays a big role in this, because there's like one carpet that the cat likes to roll around on. And so she sheds a lot on that carpet, so then the Roomba has to go in and suck up all the hair. So actually, the cat and the Roomba really have a very close relationship in that sense. The big thing to keep in mind with any Roomba, though, is don't let it taste human blood. Because then it's all over. They become man killers, and they have to be put down. But anyway, back to the point.
Right. The point of the story
is that you can make a very good argument that the Roomba is alive. It gets to where it's expecting a wall. It's expecting some sort of obstacle in the way, and it forms a map of the room so it doesn't need to run into those objects anymore. So again, in the automaton robot division, mm-hmm. it's all about defining what is a robot. And, you know, earlier we were talking about what is life. There are other roboticists who go as far as to say, hey, you know, technically our cars are robots. You know, they have all these different integrated computer systems. I think upwards of like a dozen in some of the pricier automobiles.
Yeah, I don't know what you're driving, but my car does not qualify for that category.
Really?
Yeah. My CD player doesn't even work. It's busted.
But here's the thing. Do you think your car is alive?
I don't really think of it as such, although I did give it a name.
Yeah. What'd you name your car?
Francis Ford.
Oh, see your car, then in a sense, your car is more alive than my car, which has no name. Mine's just the car. I generally can't even remember what make and model it is. Much less.
I know what make and model it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mine?
Well, because we used to park at that same MARTA station.
Oh, did we? And you were coming in, like, messing with my car while I was gone?
Yeah, I was never messing with your
car. You're the one who keyed it.
No. I would never do that. Well, not to your car, at least.
But it actually underlines something important about the whole issue of, like, robots and whether they're alive or not. I mean, a lot of it comes down to our perception a lot of the times. You know, it's like the more a robot seems to be alive, the more, you know, it is alive, at least to us. But then that's kind of our failings as human. Like, you draw anything that kind of looks like a smiley face, and we instantly begin to
anthropomorphize.
Yeah, we anthropomorphize everything.
That's true, we do.
So what will it mean for robots if they reach the point where they are definitely alive?
Sure. Do they have rights?
Yeah, do they have rights? Can they marry? I read an interesting argument about whether or not it's a good idea to send them off into space, because self-replicating intelligent robots would be great for exploring the universe. You know, just send them out, let them harvest new resources as they go. But is that ethical, to send an army of robots to another, to a distant exoplanet to eat it and make more of themselves?
Right. We know already that robots get some of the less attractive jobs, let's say.
Yeah. Like, at my house, like, I get to do the cool things, like move things into the attic.
I assume you're not down on the floor sucking up cat hair.
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole thing. It's like, we have a robot. We don't have to vacuum anymore, and, you know.
Or even in the case of the recent oil spill that's messing with the Gulf Coast right now.
Right.
I mean, what's the first thing people say? Well, send in the robots to see if they can set off or turn off that massive leak. I'm kidding. I think robots should obviously do a lot of these crazy jobs, and we shouldn't put humans at risk. But they do get a lot of really bad jobs.
Yeah. There's a great moment on Futurama where Bender, have you ever watched Futurama?
I have, yeah.
Yeah, with Bender the robot. You know, he gets all up in arms when somebody at a ball game breaks a beer bottle, and like a little robot comes up and cleans it up, and he makes a big outcry about, oh, look, it's not the human child who has to clean up the mess. And it's true. We put the robots to work. And if they end up with rights someday, then, you know, maybe they'll have to have some robotic affirmative action. I don't know. So let us know what you think. Do you think robots are alive? Do you think they will become alive?
Do you think Robert is a robot?
Cars? Did Allison key my car?
Yeah, if you have an opinion on any of these things, send us an email at sciencestuff@howstuffworks.com.
So come check out the blog. You can access it off the homepage. We also have a Facebook account, which you can just search for Stuff from the Science Lab, and that'll lead you right to it. And you can check us out on Twitter. We are Lab Stuff, and we're constantly updating that thing. So
yeah, we're all over the web.
We are tweeting.
Bringing you mad science. That's what we do. So thanks for listening, guys.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Want more HowStuffWorks? Check out our blogs on the HowStuffWorks.com homepage.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels.
No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.